Okay, good morning, everyone. I hope you're doing well and getting ready for Pesach. And we are still in Perek Vav, and last week we began looking at the beginning of Perek Vav, chapter 6, that talks about the Orev, and basically it warns a person, do not be a guarantor for other people's debts, because what's going to happen is you're going to have to pay, and you will be like an animal that is in a trap, and a bird that is in a snare. And if you are forced to be in such a position, all you can do is hisrapes. So there are two translations of hisrapes. Chazal say it's a combination of two words, hater pas. Pas means the palm of your hand with a samach. Hater pas, that is open your hand, meaning you're going to have to pay money. Or alternatively, rahav reyecha, increase the number of friends that can beg on your behalf. In Israel we call that protexia. Try to invoke whatever protexia you have, but it is a vulnerable situation. Now, as I mentioned last week, Shlomo HaMelech addresses the problem of being an Orev at least three or four times in the book of Mishlei, so obviously it was a real problem if it had to be addressed, and it's a real problem even today. As I indicated, according to Halacha, the highest level of tzedaka is to make a loan to a person. That is even a higher level than giving as a gift, because that preserves a person's dignity, similar to giving him a job. But here is the point. The point is, people are willing to become an orev when they wouldn't be willing to make a loan. And that's where the mistake is. If you are willing to loan the money, then you can be a guarantor. If you're willing to give tzedaka, you can be a guarantor. But if you're a guarantor based on the assumption that you will get paid, that is a mistake. Now,
but aren't you a guarantor for someone who has, say, a business?
Yeah.
And you guarantee for them that if that business should fail, that you would pick it up.
Yeah. Well, if there's
a
problem.
That's what the guarantor is.
Well, there are many types of guarantors. We're talking about a guarantor for a loan. Somebody needs to borrow money, and the lender just says, I'm not going to lend money unless you get me a guarantor who will pay the loan if you don't pay. Shlomo HaMelech says, not a good idea. Now, this is the simple pshat. The Vilna Gaon gives a whole... This is the beginning of Perek Vav. The Vilna Gaon takes it to a much deeper and a bit complicated level, and he says that the concept of a guarantor can apply in many, many things. Whenever you assume responsibility for the failures of somebody else, you are a guarantor. Now, you can be a guarantor in spiritual matters. A parent or a teacher of Torah is a guarantor, because there's an obligation of teaching Torah, there's an obligation of chinuch, and if the person does not live up to the chinuch, the parents might be held responsible. In fact, this is one of the meanings of the bracha that we recite when our children become bar mitzvah. Baruch Sheptarani Meon Shoshozeh, which in a kind of a negative sense is, thank God I'm not responsible for what that kid does. Now, I always thought that's a little negative, because that's he is such a problem, I'm not responsible. Some learn a different way, by the way. Some learn the other way around. There is a teaching of Chazal that sometimes children may be punished for the sins of the parents. So when the child is bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah, they will no longer be punished because of the parent. And therefore the parent is saying, Baruch Hashem, that my child will not be punished because of my sins. But either way how you learn, this responsibility...
I have a question. The Eidim under the Chuppah.
Yeah.
Are they responsible for the obligations of the husband to the wife under the Tzumah?
No. They're not. Now you can have a guarantor. I mean, we don't do it, but you can have a guarantor on a ksuva. You can have someone who signs on the ksuva as a guarantor. That's entirely halacha.
That's not an aid.
No. Witness is not assuming that responsibility. Otherwise, it would be hard to find aid. So we have the concept of an Arev as a Rebbe, as a teacher of Torah, as a parent, one who can be held to account for the spiritual failings of others. That if they fail because I did not teach them correctly, now if I taught them correctly, and they fail because of their own free will, that is not my achrayat. But if it was because of the way I taught them, either the information was wrong, or the attitude was wrong, or the emotional connection was negative, I am responsible for their averos and the like. So that is one type of arev. And the Vilna Gaon says that these psukim are referring not to the economic arev, who guarantees a loan, but to the spiritual arev, who is responsible for the chesronos of another, because of the way they taught them, the way they interacted with them, the way they raised them, etc. Now, to take this a little further, halachically, let's go back to the loan arev, the guarantor of a loan. There are two types of arevim, two types of guarantors. There is what is called an arev stam, which means a plain arev, and there is what is called an arev kablan. And the difference between arev stam and arev kablan, in the context of a loan, is that an arev stam only has to pay if the borrower doesn't. Meaning initially, the creditor must try to get paid from the borrower. If the borrower doesn't have the money, then the lender can go after the arev. But the arev cannot be sued. The arev cannot be obligated to pay unless and until the lender attempted to collect from the initial borrower. That is called an arev stam. An arev kablan is a person that assumes a direct responsibility, almost like a cosigner, or for example, a cosigner. In fact, it's very interesting. We commonly interchange the term guarantor with cosigner, but they are very, very different relationships. When you cosign a loan on behalf of somebody else, you are assuming direct liability for that loan. You can be sued without the need to go after the other person. So although you might be signing only because you want that person to get the money, but a cosigner is actually different. A cosigner is actually an arev kablan. If we put the halachic labels on it, a cosigner who can be sued directly is called arev kablan.
Yeah. When yeah. someone comes to you, co-sign their loan from a gemach, they're doing it as a kablan or as a co-signer?
Well, it depends on the gemach, but often...
Very typical situation.
Often it is a co-signer. Now, the gemach, as a matter of chesed, will first try to get money from the primary person, but halachically and legally, if the arev signed as a co-signer, he is an arev kablan, he is not an arev stam. And that's true legally as well, secularly as well. A cosigner is a co-equal party who is liable for the entire balance of the note, although he could then try to collect. Every arev, whether you're an arev, the one thing that's common, both an arev stam and an arev kablan do have the theoretical right to recover what they paid from the other party. But good luck, you know, after all, if the lender could not collect, it's not so likely that the guarantor will be able to collect. But there is a difference between the arev stam and the arev kablan. Now, what the Gra does over here is the Gra takes the halachic concepts and he tries to apply it to the spiritual concepts. He says the same thing is true. There are two types of spiritual guarantors. A parent, a teacher, a Rebbe, a Mora, a Mashpia, whatever it is generally an Arev Stam, meaning to say that they are responsible if the other person does not live up to their responsibilities, but the primary person is the person who sinned. And then there's a backup that I am also responsible for those failures. But there's another type of Arev in which the Arev is directly responsible for the negative consequences. And that is if the person is a judge or a dayan. For example, let's say Reuven is taking Shimon to Beis Din. And the Beis Din orders Shimon to pay Reuven money. And that is not a correct judgment. That is a perversion of a judgment. There, it's not simply the fact that Reuben is committing a sin by taking wrongful money. There, the Dayan is the actual person who did the sin. So the Vilna Gaon says, the judge who through ignorance or malice, either way, wrongfully decides a case, and as a result, either Reuben winds up getting money that he's not entitled to, or the other way, Shimon is paying money that he shouldn't pay, that Dayan is responsible as a thief and as a gazlan, and that's similar to an Arev Kablan, because he's not simply responsible for the sin of another person. It is directly his achrayit. This is why being a Dayan is an extremely difficult job. It is something that a person tries to shy away from. That is why if you've ever had the misfortune of having to go to Beis Din, it's not always an easy situation. What Batei Din normally ask people to do today, and this is true both in Israel and in America, they ask the parties to sign an arbitration agreement, a pshara, in which they authorize the Beis Din to decide on the basis of compromise, settlement, arbitration, and the like, as opposed to deciding according to din. Because although you would think a Dayan's job is to decide according to din, and a Dayan might try to decide according to din, but the Dayan is so afraid that if, God forbid, they decide according to din, but that's not the din, they are responsible for the great aveira of perverting justice. Masha'ein Kain, when you authorize them to arbitrate, then like whatever they decide is going to be acceptable, because the parties have accepted ahead of time that they will go with whatever the Beis Din decides. That is why, that might confuse people, that is why a Beis Din will always ask you, do you want din or do you want pshara? And they will push pshara, ad kidei kach, that if you say, I want the din to be decided according to din, somebody din will not hear the case. They'll say, I'm sorry, we don't take those cases, as it were. This reflects the tremendous pachad. Now you might say, that's a Yerida Sadoros, because a judge, that's his job, should decide according to the din. But Dayanim are very, very reluctant. I mean, let me explain the process. I don't mean to say they're not going to try to decide the din. They will try to decide the din. They will look up the din. They don't just flip a coin. They will try to decide the din, but as a backup to not being held accountable by God if their decision is erroneous, they will ask the parties to accept it as a pshara or a compromise. Yeah.
There's another reason for the arbitration agreement. If people have, the Beis Din has, in either country, America or here, the Beis Din has no enforcement powers.
Correct.
Therefore, you take that top that you signed based on having signed the arbitration agreement, and then you go to secular court and you file it.
Yeah, that's 100%
that's
correct. You're correct. And the point you're making is, even where a Beis Din will decide according to strict din, they will still want the parties to sign arbitration.
And file it.
That's correct. That will allow it to be enforced in a secular court. But besides that, that is 100% true. But besides that, the Beis Din will ask the litigants to accept their psak as some type of compromise, and does not have to be strict halacha. So according to Vilna Gaon, this is the double lashon here. Look at Perek Vav, Pasuk Aleph. You'll notice there's a reiteration. Bini, imarafta l'reyacha, if you are a guarantor to your friend, takata l'zor kapecha, you have extended your hand, like shaking of a hand, to a stranger. Now, that's describing the guarantor. In other words, in which I agree to help a friend, and I obligate myself to a stranger. But the Vilna Gaon says, instead of simply describing one thing, it's describing two things. Arafta l'reyecha refers to the relationship that I have with my students, even with my children. I am a guarantor to my beloved friend. It's a very interesting expression that we would describe the relationship of a teacher to students as one of friendship, and even of parent-child as one of friendship. Takato lezor kapecha is the responsibility of a judge who is an orev kavlan, not to pervert justice. And it's very interesting. With respect to my students and my children, the relationship is one of loving friendship. With respect to litigants, I have to be cold and treat them like strangers. In fact, that's actually a halach in the Shulchan Aruch, that the dayan is not supposed to show, I mean, he doesn't have to be rude, but the dayan is not supposed to show friendship. Because once you start showing friendship, you might show a little bit more friendship to one side than the other side. And what then happens? Even if you're not biased, the other side gets discombobulated. The other side gets a little less sure of themselves because they feel that you lied. This is a big problem, by the way, when one side is a rav that might be known to a beis din, the other side is not a rav, etc. There may be the idea that, you know, what do you do? Does the dayan say hello? If the rav knew the dayan for 30 years, now of course, in a lot of cases they'll recuse themselves. They won't hear the case. But there is going to be that issue in small communities in particular where one side, you know, and it could also apply to the rich and the powerful. So the Gra says, it's very meduyak, that the first half of the verse, which is setting up the orev, the spiritual orev, of the parent and the Rebbe, and the teacher, we use the phrase re'echa. And the second part of the pasuk, which is the orev kablan, of the dayan, we use the word zor, because there shouldn't be, at least in the context of the beis din, there should not be a notion of friendship vis-a-vis the litigants. Now, once the case is decided, and I've actually seen this, once the case is decided, all of a sudden the dayan are nice and friendly, and hi, let's have a cup of coffee, let's have a l'chaim. But until the case is decided, there has to be a certain amount of distance. So this is expressing the two ideas. Now, based on that, in Pasuk Gimel, you'll recall that Shlomo HaMelech gives two solutions, that when you're stuck as a guarantor, what are your two solutions? Solution number one, which is not really a solution, but it's inevitable, Hisrapes. Now Hisrapes, which is solution number one, has two translations. Hisrapes means Hater Pas, open your hand, pay. And the second hisrapes is allow yourself to be trampled, beg. So that's solution one. So solution one has two translations. Pay or beg. That's two translations. Haterpas or hisrapes, to be trampled. Solution number two is rahavreya, increase your friends, meaning get your friends to beg on your behalf for texia. So here's how the Vilna Gaon divides it. The Vilna Gaon says, Hisrapes is the solution for the judge, and Rahav Reyacha is the solution for the teacher and the parent. So how does this work? So he says, Hisrapes means that the judge himself, again, but the same two translations, that if a judge made a mistake in law, now this is a very complicated halacha, is a judge, I'm talking about halacha now, is a judge financially responsible for wrongful decisions? Meaning, let's imagine that a judge paskins that Shimon has to pay Reuven $10,000. And Shimon pays Reuven $10,000. Shimon paid $10,000. The judge then concludes that this was a mistake. This was an error. Well, he can order, he can rehear, he can order Reuven to refund the money, but let's say Reuven is gone, Reuven spent the money, Reuven is, in Las Vegas. So Shimon now says to the judge, hey judge, you cost me $10,000. That was shelo kedin. You gotta pay me. Interestingly enough, for very good reasons, halacha by and large says that dayanim are not financially responsible for mistakes that they make in their judgments. And the reason that is so is that's a takanas chazal, because otherwise people would never want to serve as a dayan. Right? If I serve as a dayan, and I can be held liable for all of the negative consequences. However, lifnim mishurat hadin, if a judge wants to go beyond the letter of the law, it is an act of righteousness and piety to correct the losses that people suffered because of your psak by giving them money. So therefore, hisrapes, haterpas, is telling the dayan, be willing to pay for your mistakes. Now I will say that we actually have a hanhaga that goes beyond this. There were dayanim or poskim who would actually pay for losses that their psak caused, even when the psak was correct. So for example, if a poor person would come in with a chicken, and the chicken was treif, then the rabbi looked at the chicken, there were great rabbanim that would give the woman the cost of the chicken or more, because they didn't want a person to suffer because of them. Now that's not even what this is talking about. This is talking about correcting an erroneous psak. The case I just told you is paying for even a psak that was correct. So that's one hisrapes. That's what the dayan does. And the second thing is also true. Hisrapes is make yourself humble. Now here, the Gra brings a Gemara that says, do you remember the Asara Haruge Malchus, the 10 martyrs that were killed at the time of the Chorban of the Beis HaMikdash? Rabbi Akiva was one of them. Actually, they were not all killed at the same time. They were killed over a period around 70 years. Although the poetry and the piyutim we recite makes it seem that they were all killed the same time, it in fact took place over a long period of time. But two of the martyrs were Rabbi Yishmael the Kohen Gadol and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who was the Nasi, the head of the Sanhedrin. And the Gemara gives us the following story. The Gemara gives us a story that when Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel and Rabbi Yishmael were seized to be executed, Rabbi Yishmael was sobbing, he was weeping. And Rabbi Shimon said to him, in 2 minutes we're going to be in Olam Haba with Hashem. We're dying al Kiddush Hashem. Why are you crying? What are you afraid of? We're leaving this world to go to Olam Haba. So Rabbi Yishmael said, but look at the way we're getting killed. We're going to get killed like the murderers, like the lowliest gutter criminals. What did we do to deserve such an ignominious way, the way you would kill a common criminal? What did we do wrong? What is Hashem expecting of us? So listen to what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel told him. Perhaps there was a time that you were sitting at a meal or you were taking a nap, and a woman came to ask a shayla about nida or a shayla about kashrus, and your attendant told her that you are asleep. And the Torah says, if you afflict the widow or the orphan, the woman might be a widow. So what does the Torah say? My anger will wax against you, and I will kill you with the sword. And therefore he told Rabbi Yishmael, perhaps that was our avera, that we did not show enough care and concern for the vulnerable, and for the weak, and for the helpless. And because Hashem judges tzaddikim by a much higher level, then even if it's a relatively minor thing that the woman was told, come back in half an hour, that could be something that could, God forbid, trigger divine punishment. So here's what the Vilna Gaon says. And in a way, it's almost a non sequitur. Our problem here is the judge that perverts justice. Not intentionally, he makes mistakes. And he's going to be accountable. So how does he get around that? By making himself more available to those who are vulnerable. Because it is the humility that will give people to make correct decisions. That is the hisrapes. Because otherwise, it's kind of a non sequitur. If the problem is the judge makes mistakes, I would have said, learn more. Go to kollel more. I mean, in a way, it's not really an answer directly to say, make yourself humble. But you see a very profound idea, that it is the humility of a person that will give them access to divine wisdom. They will perceive the wisdom of the Torah through their humility. So, therefore, the two pshatim of Hisrates are still the same. One is, open your hand, pay the people that you've hurt, even if al pi halacha you don't have to. And the second translation is, make yourself humble. Not in the sense of begging, a little different twist, but in the sense of humility, making yourself accessible, making yourself available, and through that humility, your mistakes will be reduced as well. So that Hisrapes is the solution to the Dayan. And Rahav Reyecha, expand your friends, is the solution to the Rebbe and parent. Now, what does that mean? So Rahav Reyecha here, the Vilna Gaon says, does not mean get more friends, but it means enlarge your involvement with your students and with your children. Spend more time with them. Let them know that you're available for them, that they should feel, and this is a very difficult, it's a very, very difficult scenario, but the children should feel, as great as their parent is, as accessible as their parent might be to the rest of the world, but the children are the most important thing. And children have to have a feeling that they are the most important, and if you're a Rebbe with Talmidim, your Talmidim are like your children. That's a very, very important point. I think I mentioned before, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zichrono Livracha, used to live in, when he was alive, he used to live in Katama, although he moved away from that the last few years. And everyone knows the Katamon Shtiblach and Rechov HaChish, famous community of Shul in Katamon. So he was learning with his son. He would often learn with his daughters as well, but he was learning with his son at night. And somebody went over to him and said, Rosh Hashiva, I'm very impressed that a person that's a busy Rosh Hashiva makes time to learn with his children. It's very impressive. So Rav Lichtenstein said, I don't know what you mean, makes time to learn with my children. My job is to learn with my children. In my spare time, I have a yeshiva too. He says, but my job is to learn. V'shinantam levanecha. Now it's true, v'shinantam levanecha, vanecha also includes students. But the primary meaning, ein mikra yotze midei pshuta, that you don't take a verse away from its simple meaning. You have to spend time with your children. And people like to talk about quality time versus quantity time. And, you know, and that has a point, but the MS is, you need a lot of quantity time to get quality time. I mean, if you're only going to spend half an hour with somebody, it's very hard to get into the mood, so to speak, where that's going to be wonderful quality time. But quantity time, you know, as life goes on, so there'll be moments of intimacy and moments of closeness, etc. But it builds up from the kind of routine of everyday life and everyday interactions. So the truth is, it's a little bit of a myth to some degree. I mean, sometimes it's unavoidable that the quality time can be done in very, very short segments because it is accumulation of moments and shared experiences and the like. So therefore, you see that the Gemara is splitting everything up, meaning to say we're addressing two types of guarantors. We are addressing the judge, and we are addressing the Rebbe / Mora / Parent. The judge's concern is he has to do the job right. And for that, he needs humility. With the parent, Rebbe, Mora, there needs to be a relationship of love. And for that, you need time and the feeling of friendship, of loving friendship with your children. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, in the 60s in particular, at least in the United States, this whole concept was, you know, you have to be your kid's best friend, so to speak, and there was even a movement, which is totally against halacha, where parents would call, where kids would call their parents by their first name, and, hey, you know, Charlie, whatever it would be. Obviously, parents are parents, and kids are kids, and kibbutz aviyim creates a hierarchy. But reyecha does not have to mean kind of we're equal. In fact, Hashem is called our friend. The pasuk in Mishlei says, "Reyecha v'reya avicha al tazov." Do not abandon your dear friend and the friend of your father, and that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, friend is not does not have to connote equality, and therefore, indeed, The same way, of course, in an infinitely reduced way, that God is our friend, our parents and our rebbes have to be our friends. The relationship should be a relationship of love. It should not be a relationship of fear. And even when there is discipline, the discipline comes from love. Chazal have a marvelous, marvelous statement, with apologies to lefties. And it says, with your right hand you draw near, and with your left hand you push away. And this is going with the idea that the right hand is the dominant and strong hand. Again, with apologies to lefties. If you're lefty, just switch it. And the left hand is the weaker hand. And in every relationship, there is endearment and closeness. And there's the need for discipline and punishment. You have to have that. But the discipline and the punishment are with the left hand. They are the weaker, less dominant part of the relationship. The dominant part of the relationship has to be love, so that when there is punishment, the child or the student knows that it's coming from love. It's not coming from anger and the like.
I always have had difficulty with the definition of being humbled. Everyone uses it in different ways. What is a working definition of being humbled?
Yeah, so actually, it gives me a good excuse to digress a little bit, based on yesterday's Parsha. Humility, okay, the most important thing is to know what humility is not. Humility is not, I am worthless, I am no good, I am incapable. That is not humility. Humility is an appreciation of the gifts that you have and the kochot that you have, and to know that, as the t-shirt saying says, God does not make junk, and if every person in the world has a mission, then Hashem has given us the tools to do that mission. But humility means that you know that it comes from Hashem and you're grateful. You don't become arrogant towards other people. You don't look down at other people. And even if people seem not to be as good as you in whatever way it is, you look at them with compassion, in the sense that they had different circumstances in life. And you don't know what you would have been had you had those circumstances. But there's a genuine self-esteem in which you value your life and you value your abilities and you value your mission. In this connection, let me just mention that the Sfas Emes says that this is the sod, this is the secret of the Para Aduma. Now, the Para Aduma is very complicated. On one hand, we are told it's the chok par excellence. It's the mitzvah for which we don't know the reason. Shlomo HaMelech, the wisest of all people, went through every mitzvah. And the one mitzvah he couldn't get was Parah Aduma. And what is so unusual? Well, besides the fact that, you know, why a red cow, all of these different details. But the primary problem with Parah Aduma is the paradox and contradiction in the Parah Aduma, because what do we say? If I became Tamei through contact with the dead, I get sprinkled with that water and ashes and I am pure, and yet all the people that handled that water and ashes, they become Tamei. Now, if we look at Tamei and Tahor as closeness to God and distance from God, how can the same thing bring me close and the same thing bring other people far away? That is actually why it's called a chok, because it embodies a paradox, an internal contradiction. So the Sfas Emes says the following thought. He says, death comes into the world because of arrogance, gaiva. How do we know that? Because death came into the world because of the chet of the Eitz Hadas. But what did the Nachash say to Chava that enticed her to eat from the Eitz Hadas? He said to her, "B'yom achalcha mimenu, the day that you eat from this fruit, nifkachu einechem, your eyes shall open up, v'hayisem kelokim, you will be like God, yodei tov v'ra, to truly know and discern good and evil." It was, however we understand it, it's an enormously complicated problem, it was a God pill. That's the ultimate ego trip. Imagine somebody offers you a pill and says, take this pill, you'll be Hashem. Wow, what a great ego trip. Be Hashem, take this pill. So it was kavod and arrogance that brought death into the world. So the Sfas Emes says, how do you get purified and liberated from death? By ashes. Now again, we're not explaining why the red cow, that's another thing. But what are ashes? Ashes are the ultimate symbol of humility, submission, self-abnegation. Avraham Avinu says to Hashem, Anochi Afor Va'efer. Death comes into the world because of the arrogance, and indeed, we are made in the image of God. We have intelligence, we have creativity, we have tremendous powers. So God put death into the world to keep us humble. So if death comes into the world because of arrogance, how are we liberated from death? By ashes. And that is why ashes, which is humility, purifies us. But here is the thing. The same humility that can be such a wonderful vehicle to bring you to God, if you take it in the right way, can be a vehicle that takes you away from Hashem if it turns into worthlessness, self-despair. In other words, a person could sometimes use humility as a way of denigrating themselves. And then the attitude is, what use are my mitzvahs? What use are my learning? What use are my prayers? Who am I? And that's the remez. The same ashes that can purify the impure by taking the arrogant and making them humble, if it's taken in the wrong direction, can take a pure person and destroy him. Because that's the great Yetzer Hara, that we don't matter, that what we do doesn't make a difference. Rav Yerucham of Mir, the great Mashgiach of Mir, used to say that the person who is not aware of their mistakes and their flaws and their faults is a foolish person. But a person who is not aware of their greatness is a tragic person. Because a person has a mission, a person has a goal. A person was put here into the world to accomplish. When humility turns into not being aware, then it becomes a cop-out, it becomes an excuse, it becomes a simple resignation. You know, what difference does it make? I don't have to do anything. And that's the Yetzer Hara, that's a from Yetzer Hara. The Mesivas Yesharim talks about, sometimes the Yetzer Hara comes in the guise of seeming to be righteous and holy, by saying, I'm going to be so humble. So, I'm not sure if I'm fully answering your question, but the point is, it is a balance. Now, when the Torah says, Moshe was the most humble of all people. Now, let's imagine this. Moshe didn't say, if somebody asked Moshe Rabbeinu with Shiloh, he'd say, oh, go ask the five-year-old, he's so much smarter than me, he knows more than me, you know, I'm worse than a child. If Moshe would have said such a thing, that would not have been righteousness, that would have been insanity, that would have been delusion. Moshe was the leader of 3 million people in the world. And he made decisions. And when people had to be killed, they were killed. And he spoke to Hashem, Panim el Panim. And at the same time, the most humble of all people that ever existed. So you see, it's not a contradiction, that's the other way around. In fact, in Parshas Zohar, you actually see this kind of discussion. When Shaul HaMelech fails to carry out Hashem's commandments to totally eradicate Amalek, so when Shmuel comes to see him afterwards, and by the way, it's very poignant. A lot of people don't pay attention to this. Hashem first told Shmuel, Shaul is out. I'm getting rid of him. The Pasuk says, Shmuel cried and begged Hashem for an entire night. It's so interesting because Shmuel is very cold to Shaul once they meet. And you get the impression that Shmuel doesn't care about him anymore. That's not at all the case. It's rather a tribute to Shmuel, such an Eved Hashem, that when Hashem says, carry out the order, Shmuel will carry out the order. But his heart was broken. Shmuel begged and cried for a whole night. And imagine Shmuel's prayers, right? The Koach of Shmuel's tefillahs for a whole night. Didn't help. So he goes and he sees Shaul, and Shaul is kind of happy with himself, and Shaul says, I have done everything Hashem wanted me to do. And Shmuel says, I hear that sheep bleeding in the background. What is that about? So Shaul first says, well, the people made me do it. And he says, and they're going to bring sacrifices from their sheep to you, God. It's kind of like Adam, when Hashem confronts Adam. Why did you eat from the Eitz HaDaas? So he says, the woman that you gave me made me do it. It's kind of a double play. Number one is the woman, and number two, you gave me the woman. So it's not my fault. So Shaul kind of blames the people, and he says, after all, we're doing it for Hashem too. So Shmuel says something very interesting. Shmuel basically said to Shaul, your humility is interfering with your mission. You might think you're lowly and you're insignificant, because Shaul was a very, very humble person. But you are the head of the Jewish people. You are the melech. You need to take command. You need to assume responsibility. Same thing with the parent. You raise a child, and a person might say, who am I to tell my child what to do? This is actually a bit of a legitimate issue. I want my child to be more disciplined. I want my child to behave a certain way. But then I ask myself. Hopefully, you don't discuss it with your child necessarily. I don't do all these things. Well, one answer is, so go ahead and do them. but then a person says, how can I, demand of my child, to live by a standard that is higher than me? Well, ultimately, you got to bridge the gap. That's true. But in the short term, you can't allow that attitude to say, I'm not going to impose any standards on my children because I don't live by them. You can't do that. You gotta take leadership. Yeah.
To get back to the parent as an OA.
Yep.
How much can the parent be responsible? And we say that a parent is not to blame if the child is at risk and goes off.
Yes.
And that the parents did everything we know in many situations.
Yep.
I
do want to make it very clear, because I know there are people in all walks of life suffer. There are children of Gedolim that have gone after Jack. So God forbid, I don't mean at all to suggest that in every case parents did something wrong. Sometimes there are traumas that occur to children outside of the family circle. Sometimes it's a question of bechira. Human beings have free will, and they make decisions, and whatever it might be. So, God forbid, only Hashem knows exactly who is at fault, if anybody is at fault. And it's not for us to judge anybody. But, nevertheless, I as a parent have an achrayas to try to create the most loving and positive atmosphere for Yiddishkeit that I can. That's all. Meaning, and to know that if I didn't do what I can, Hashem is going to hold me responsible. But as I said, that doesn't mean if you do everything you can, there are guaranteed results. There are no guarantees in life. And why children go off the derech is a very, very, very complicated phenomenon that doesn't have a single answer. In fact, you can't even ask the question, why do children go off the derech? Every child will have a different reason. And it's not like one side, why did 6 million Jews die in the Holocaust? Also, there are maybe 6 million reasons why they happened. But nevertheless, what the Pasuk is telling us is that I do have a responsibility to create the atmosphere in which the probabilities for Hatzlacha are greatest. And in that context, the probabilities of Hatzlacha are much greater in a home of happiness, love, and joy than they will be in a home of harshness and excessive discipline. Now, granted, some kids turn out great, notwithstanding the harshness of the home. Some kids turn out not so great, notwithstanding the love of the home. 100%. But you got to work with what is the most probable way of making things good, and it is the love more than the richut Well, on one hand, we say the Baruch of Tarani, but on the other hand, I've seen poskim that say that as long as your children are living at home, you're responsible. And I'll tell you, too, the Stipler, when Reb Chaim Kanevsky was already a great, great gum, and already a grandfather, Reb Chaim Kanevsky. So when he would come to his father would make a point of learning with his son, and he said, you know, I still have a chiyuv to teach my son Torah. In fact, you would even give him candy when you handed out candies. When he handed out candies to the great-grandchildren, he gave to Reb Chaim, and he said, you should have a candy also, and the like, you know. So to keep that that relationship, you know. What do they say? Little kids, little problems. Big kids, big problems. So, you know, you kind of have the same thing. This, I have to say, is, I think, a big nafkamina between a Yiddish parent and the outside world. In the outside world, you know, kids are 18, you know, out of the house, you know, they're on their own. It's not, you know, not my responsibility. A Jewish parent doesn't say that. A Jewish parent says, you know, this is my child, and I care for them no matter how old they are. When Rav Cook's mother was Nifteris in Eretz Yisrael, he was zocheh to have both of his parents come to Eretz Yisrael after him. So his mother was Nifter in her 90s. He was already in his 60s when she was Nifteris. So he was crying because he said, I don't have someone to tell me to put on my coat anymore when it's raining. I guess his wife didn't want much reaction on that. But a mother still does that. That's what a Jewish mother does. You know, people make jokes about it, but that's 100% the truth. So really, the relationship exists at all ages. Now, let me give you another good diak. He continues the symmetry here. Because Pasuk Dalet then goes on and says, and don't fall asleep. Do not give shena le'enecha. In other words, do your job. Do not fall asleep. Utnuma, and slumber li'af apecha, to your eyelids. Now here the Gra says, a gevaldige chiluk. He says, what is the difference between shena and tinuma? Now in English we just say sleep, slumber. What is the difference in Lashon HaKodesh? So he says, shena is when you lose consciousness, meaning you're asleep. Tenuma is your eyes are closed, but if someone talks to you, you still hear. Your mind is still working, and you can hear, but you're not seeing. So here's what the Vilna Gaon says. The teacher of Torah has to constantly learn Torah to be sure that they're teaching Torah correctly. Therefore, don't fall asleep at the wheel, meaning your mind needs to be active. But the Dayan not only needs to be sensitive to the Torah, the Dayan needs to be sensitive to the facts. This is a very important situation. A person can have all the wonderful theoretical knowledge of Torah, but if they don't know how business works, they don't know how mortgages work, they don't know how technology works, they're not going to be able to paskin correctly, because garbage in, garbage out. You could be the greatest posek in the world. You could know the Shas and the Shulchan Aruch by heart. But if you don't know how a refrigerator works electronically, you will not be able to paskin, can I use a refrigerator on Shabbos? So a dayan, so that's between a Rosh Hashiva and a dayan. A Rosh Hashiva or a Rebbe has to know the Torah. The dayan not only has to know the Torah, but has to know the world, has to know the facts. And also there's another issue too, that sometimes people come to Beis Din and they tell lies. Meaning, he may have two Edom, and the halachic requirements of witnesses are met. But if you would be a more sophisticated person, knowing the way people make up stories, you'd be able to see that they're not telling the truth. The story doesn't match. So, as a result, he says, with respect to the Rebbe and the teacher of Torah, the ikar is they don't fall asleep, their minds still be open to the Torah. But with respect to the Dayan, they shouldn't allow their eyelids to close, meaning they need to watch the world as well. Meaning, don't let your mind fall asleep refers to the Torah knowledge, and don't let your eyelids close refers to the worldly knowledge. Now, I would say, though, that when it comes to, this is a little different than the Vilna Gaon, That, this also applies. Even though he's saying it only applies by the judge, it also applies by parents and teachers. And that is, the parent and the teacher has to be attuned not only to the truth of their Torah learning, meaning that I'm teaching truth, they also have to be attuned to the emotional condition of the recipient. They have to pay attention to the recipient's personality. How are they doing? Chanoch lenar al pi darka. You see, and that's the idea of not letting your eyelids close, meaning even if your mind is filled with beautiful Torah insight, but if the eyelids are closed, you're not seeing the reality in front of you. And that's an important thing. You know, that's an important thing that my Rosh Hashiva used to say. The Gemara says that you should only learn Torah if the Rebbe is like a Malach of Hashem. It's based on a pasuk in Malachi. If the Rebbe is like a Malach, Yevakshu Torah mipiyu. If the Rebbe is not a Malach, al Yevakshu. This is a Gemara in Chagiga, and it's based on a pasuk in Malachi. So my Rosh Hashiva of Riddiman, Zichrono Livracha, used to say, what is the meaning of comparing a Rebbe to a Malach? Why are we comparing? So he said, it's based on the teaching that a Malach can only do one job. A Malach cannot have two jobs. A Malach cannot do two shalichasas. And that is when a Rebbe is with his students, they are the only thing on the Rebbe's mind. The only thing on the Rebbe's mind, on the teacher's mind, is the students. If the Rebbe is thinking of other things, even in his own learning, so to speak, he says that is not a true, that is not a true Rebbe. Same thing with parents. You know, unfortunately, this is part of the curse among many things of the modern age with cell phones and internet. putting aside all the bad things you can do with these things, but even the notion of constantly being distracted, constantly having something else. You know, when you're talking to a child, you know, to pick up a cell phone. Or whatever it is. What does that mean? Even something like call waiting is a big problem. I don't want to take a survey, but you know, you're on the phone with somebody. Another phone comes in. You take the phone call? That's, I think it's a little bit of a pegia in the Derech Eretz. I want to see if somebody more important than you is calling me. And if they're not more important than you, I'll then put them on hold and go back to you. You know, you're on the phone. It's like you're in a conversation with somebody. You don't interrupt it to go to somebody else. So that's the idea of Malach Hashem Tzevakot, and that is the notion of not only must the mind be awake in terms of absorbing Torah, but the eyelids have to be open, that you see the impact of your teaching on the world. And he says, Vilna Gaon says, these two dimensions of a judge are merumas in two verses about shochad. It says by shochad, ki ha-shochad Yaver pikhim, the shochad blinds the pikeach, the clever. And another pasuk says, Hashochad yaver chachamim, it blinds wise. Now the difference between pikeach and chacham, a chacham is a person who is wise in the Torah. A pikeach is a person who is clever in the ways of the world. Shochad can distort both of my perceptions, but a judge can not only be, a Rosh Hashiva maybe could be a chacham, but a dayan not only is a chacham, a dayan must also be a pikeach. And the Gra says that's merumas in the sleep of the mind and the closing of the eyelids. Okay, I was told that next week we do have one more shiur, so this will be the last shiur till after Pesach. So.